You are listening to the Backstage Pass podcast, hosted by Hannah Trigwell and brought to you by Tommen.
Emma Blackery, what's going on?
Oh God, we're in the middle of a pandemic, I think. unless you just meant hi. Hi.
I was going to go into it more softly, but I thought,
that
hell.
That was so intense. Oh
hell,
my God.
Let's just do it.
It was like the softest, most intense introduction ever. What's going on? Oh God, what's Emma Blackery done now? Oh no. Oh, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm talking to you. The technology seems to be working all right.
Why did you say that?
I know,
why
I've jinxed it now.
Why would you say that?
You've
ruined it.
Oh,
terrible. No.
How are you managing to be a musician in these times?
Well, I've had my EP scheduled for May 15th since before all of this began. It was in the pipeline for this specific date before all of the lockdown, this strange, unprecedented time.
I hope this email finds you well.
I hope this email finds you well in these strange and unprecedented times. I never had any plans to push it back. I've seen loads of artists push back their album releases and things like that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what we need right now is things to entertain people. We need things to, you know, keep us going and things to look forward to. So I don't really understand why artists are doing it. It's like a label thing or something. But I was never going to delay the release of my EP. Still May 15th. So cool. Just been looking forward to that, really. Had my music video out on April 3rd, I think, was the first single that was released. And that led 6 weeks lead time between my single and the EP.
Do you release independently?
I released through a distributor called The Orchard. They're under Sony.
Yeah.
And I've worked with them for the first time for my album release and then for my single, Cute Without You, last year. And this is the third release under them. So it's been an enjoyable experience. It's been really, really good. I've worked with other distributors in the past as well. And to be honest, I've never really had any sort of major issue with them. I think the most major issues you might find with them is that you have to go through Vivo for a lot of distribution contracts and things like that. So music video wise, you have to sort of submit your video, which is, it has to be a certain spec, size, everything. And it's all done via a distributor. You don't actually get to log in on the Vivo platform. My latest music video, for some reason, still an unexplained error, it was supposed to go up at midnight GMT and it went up midnight EST. So I was telling everyone to refresh at midnight for my music video and it came out at 5 a.m. So, you know, there's room for mistakes with everything, though. Accidents happen. They're happy little accidents, so
Absolutely. It's
fine. At least America was awake for it. You have to sort of, take the positives with it, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's a decent silver lining. Do you have management?
I don't at the moment. I am in between management, as I say.
Yes.
My partner and I are looking after my music side together as a team. I had management up until about this time last year. I've had some experiences with different managements, and I've had some positives and some negatives. And for the time being, I wanted to just really retain control over this EP. This is the first release that I've done without management since 2016. I think it was the first time I had a manager on board when I released something. So it's been the first time in 4 years that I've had way more control over stuff. And I've learned so much that is usually kept in chains of emails that you never really see.
Yeah.
So it's been a lot more hands-on. It's been really, really good.
Yeah. I don't know how your experience has been, but my experience in the past year of not having a manager has been hands-on, but also there's a side of it that I never... Any kind of hard to have conversations or negative experiences is kind of shielded, isn't it, when you have a manager.
Exactly. The manager sort of can act like the bad guy for you.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was always a bit of a fucking hard bitch. Sorry for the swearing. Oh no, you're gonna have to bleep everything.
No, feel free to swear.
But I've always been a bit of a tough cookie, as it were. Before I started working on my own, so I don't know. I'm a pretty outspoken person. When something goes wrong, like, I want to get to the bottom of it. I don't really care about who's to blame. I don't really care about getting mad. The priority is just getting it fixed.
Yeah.
You know, finding out why something has happened or why something hasn't happened. And then once it's fixed, then get mad later.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been a really, really interesting experience. The way I would just describe it is just, it's just been the biggest learning curve for me. I've learned that there's a lot that I didn't know had to happen. I will say that it's been a lot of hard work with the EP release. There's a lot that I've learned in terms of distribution and, you know, having to have like communication with people on different sides of things that I wasn't really used to. But also at the same time, the amount of control that I've now got over my stuff, the control I have over my finances, you know, budgeting things myself. It's been a bit of a relief, really, you know, finally taking back control over how my own money is being spent, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, because I saw a video that you did about how previous music releases have gone. And I found, I actually found watching that super refreshing, because not a lot of people talk about not only the financial side, but just the amount of energy that goes into releasing a song or an EP or an album, whatever it is. But and that whole side of things, just, it's just not really spoken about.
Well, that's the problem, though, isn't it? With the fact that it's not spoken about, people are led to believe that, you know, the reason that people say, like, oh, drop the single, queen, drop the album, sis, and stuff like that, is because they think it's literally just like a click of a button. Yeah. And then it's like, uploaded to Spotify there. And that's not the case. The amount of like planning and lead time and pitching to Spotify editorial playlists and things like that that has to happen, the music video all being edited, everything being accounted for, contracts, everything, it just doesn't work the way that I think a lot of people think it does. And that's kind of why I wanted to start making more honest videos about the music industry, especially as an independent artist, because people don't see it. And if I had seen those videos when I first started, I would have had a much bigger scope of like what it entails and how difficult it can be.
I think I was definitely naive about that starting out, just thinking that it would, you, like you say, just be a click of a button to put a song out, and, you know, I'm just going to write a song in my bedroom and then I'm going to record it and then I'm going to click and it will go up.
Exactly.
Even if you use something like a distributor that's, you know, like widely accessible that you don't sign an exclusive contract with, like, for example,
like CD Baby and TuneCore, yeah, like that.
It's way more than just pushing a button, even if you do it like that.
Well, my partner has just released his debut single through TuneCore, and it was our first experience of it. Like we'd never used TuneCore for either of our music before.
You're right.
And we found it really, really interesting, like the way, because it's also like a cover, like a different take on a previous song.
Yeah.
We had to like get licensing and things like that. And it was a complete learning curve for us. I know I keep saying learning curve. But it was,
it was really refreshing.
Isn't it? Yeah. I mean, we had to learn, you know, all these things ourselves and, you know, uploading to TuneCore. And then, you know, again, you think like, oh, maybe it's just a case of upload and then sent. And then you get a little message saying, well, it might go up in 5 days, or it might take 14 days, or iTunes might hold it for a couple of weeks, or, and it's like, hang on, you didn't say that. Nobody said any of this. But thankfully it all went up fine. We got it all there successfully, but it was a really, really, it was really, really cool to have that experience. You know, me usually going through a distributor and my partner going through like a sort of DIY distributor, you know, now we have, but we both have experience of both. So it's,
do you live
good
together, you and your partner?
We do. We're quarantined together.
He's, I was thinking it must be a very musical household.
It is. I mean, I'm speaking to you in my my office at the minute, as you can see from all the amount of mess behind me. But yeah, it's a pretty musical house. We like it. I've got to be honest, I haven't been writing a lot. I always find that when I'm releasing a new bit of material, I find it extremely hard to write something new until that piece of work is out. I don't know what it is. I tend to sort of write in eras. So, you know, if I've got this EP coming out, once this EP's out, I'm sure I'll be writing again. But for now, all of my energy is just focusing on these four songs that are coming out in this one like neat package, May 15th. And then after May 15th, it's like, right, promote that. And then would be a tour, obviously not right now. Yeah. And then write new music. I very much separate things like that. I'm very jealous of artists that can just write and write and write like every couple of days and just be like, oh, I'll put an EP together. Which of these 200 songs should I put on it? You know, I've never worked like that. And I know some people that do. And I'm just like, how? How can you like compartmentalize things like this? I don't understand.
Do you like co-writing or do you mostly write by yourself?
I mostly write by myself, to be honest. I usually come up with like the idea, stick it on like a voice memo usually, if it's an acoustic guitar based song. Recently I've tried to write more stuff on Logic. Sometimes it's a hit, sometimes it's a miss. But usually it starts with an idea that I have, and then my partner helps me build on it, like whether it's production wise or because he's a bassist, he also writes bass lines for me. And we work on them together. There's a couple of songs in this EP that my partner's really, really helped me with as well. But yeah, most of the time it just starts with an idea that I have, and then, you know, it might be like a minute long, and then I'll just keep working on it from there.
I used to watch a lot of your videos before I necessarily thought of you as a musician, and that might be like my naivety as a viewer, but I originally years ago was thinking that you were, again, sorry, but
no,
thought that you were like a comedian.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I uploaded a lot of comedy videos, you know.
Yeah.
But I started my channel in order to release music. I started out with just me and an acoustic guitar and Bandcamp, and I wanted to have a little YouTube channel, and that's why it's just my name, you know, just Emma Blackery, and not some weird like username that we all used to use in 2012. But you know, over time, I started making comedy videos, and eventually they became sort of what I was known for over my music. And then, you know, ever since like 2013, I've been doing both sort of side by side.
Yeah.
But obviously the comedy videos are what, you know, stuck in people's minds. And I'm always like, hey guys, I make music too. But I do think I was one of the first sort of like, at least like UK female personalities that was releasing music alongside other content as well.
Yeah.
Now it's pretty commonplace. I feel that there are a lot of YouTube personalities that have started to delve into music, some of it great, some of it not so great. I do think there's still a massive stigma. I still see tweets now and again, just randomly, not about me, but being like, what is it with YouTubers and thinking they can sing? And it's like,
oh, wow.
It's horrible. You know, there's still very much a stigma of, you know, why does she keep trying to be a musician? Why can't she just make comedy like we like? And it can be a bit of a struggle, but.
Like people think that they see one video and that's you in the, completely, that is you. There are no other sides of you.
Oh, exactly. Just one dimensional, right?
Yeah. When somebody comes along and makes something and then decides to go into music, it's usually because they've been doing music the whole time.
Me doing other sort of types of content has contributed positively to my music career. It's also been to its detriment as well. I think, you know, without doing the comedy stuff, my music may not have reached so many people. I think it's definitely given like my music a step up. It's given it a platform. I also think that me doing other types of content make people take me less seriously as a musician sometimes. I think, you know, I know of other like YouTube personalities, or they were YouTube personalities who then one day just like cutthroat sort of put a wall down and went, right, I only do music now. And it has a very sort of temporary shift of like subscriber numbers and people freaking out. But as long as they stick to it, then it usually does well. But the thing is, I enjoy making different types of content. I don't want to suddenly limit myself to not being able to make a comedy video or a sit down chatty video.
Yeah.
You know, it's this very tough thing of being able to stand up and say, I'm a musician. Like, I just make music now. A great example of that would be Tessa Violet. You know, I remember being subscribed to Mika Kitty back in like 2011.
Yeah.
You know, and then one day it just, bam, started playing acoustic guitar, and then just music, you know. And I'm sure it surprised a lot of people, but she followed what she wanted to do, you know. People such as Dodie, however, Dodie's been uploading music since she started. It's pretty much always been music with a couple of like chatty videos on another channel. So people wouldn't have had that sort of shock of, you know, suddenly suddenly being a musician sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So there's like different ends of the spectrum, I think. Like, I feel like there's like, you know, Tessa on one side where it's just, it was like everything but music and then music. And then there's me in the middle that just still does both, enjoys both. And then there's those who are creators that have just uploaded music from the very, very start.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there is like a spectrum of like how seriously people take those musicians. And yeah, it's an interesting one. I don't want to let go of everything that I love. So it's been a bit of a delicate balance at times, but
I think if you're doing stuff that you enjoy, that's what you should do. I mean, from a creator and from a viewer's point of view, like I used to actually for years every week only put out covers.
Mm-hmm.
And now I don't do that because I used to love putting out covers and now I love putting out original music.
I very much used to say, no, I'm not a YouTuber, I'm a musician. I'm not a YouTuber, I'm a musician. That was around 2016 when...
There was a stigma around it almost, wasn't there?
Oh, God, yeah. It really, really was.
Around the word it was... YouTuber.
YouTuber, you know, it still is a dirty word though, I think. Yeah. I think there's still... So long as there are still idiots doing stupid things that make bad headlines for young creative people, I think there's always going to be a stigma. So long as there are articles falsely saying that we're all millionaires, that we sit around with a camera and that we earn billions a year, there's always going to be a stigma.
Yeah.
You know, I think for as long as there is the ability for young people to work from home and be self-employed by using the platform YouTube, I think, unfortunately, there's always going to be a stigma. It's about just trying to, it's not even about trying to prove it wrong. It's not even about, you know, trying to stand out and say, we're not all bad. It's about finding your own peace with it, I think, and just finding love in your own community rather than letting all the negativity outside of your community affect you all that much.
I think that's a good way to look at it. Do you like going to like creator summits?
No, not at all.
You probably won't remember this, but I met you at a creator summit about 8 years ago, maybe 9 years ago.
And 8 years ago.
And we both were not enjoying it. Let's just say that.
Oh, geez, really? That sound. Do you know what? I don't have memory of it. My memory's really concerningly bad. But that definitely sounds like me. That absolutely sounds like me. It's yeah, you know what? I've been to a couple of creative summits in London. I've been invited to ones in like Madrid and Italy and things like that. And I just don't enjoy them. I don't enjoy the corporateness of it all. I've done things, I can't remember what they call it, brand something. Google has their own like little convention where they literally invite like brand ambassadors and A&R people for brands. And this one year I did that, Brandcast, I think it's called.
Okay.
And they literally just had creators turn up at like 8 o'clock in the morning and rehearse us on a spinning platform waving to these brands in the audience.
No.
Blankety blank, for God's sake. It was me, there was Dan and Phil, there was Louise Pentland was there. I think Tom Scar was there. And we were all just on this rotating stage, just waving, smiling, and it was like 10 second full circle rotated, and it was literally Google going, look, these are YouTubers, we own YouTube, look at these people you could be using. Nothing came of it whatsoever. I think a lot of people did it because they thought, you know, well, Google would really, really like us to do that, and they'd think of us really favorably. But as far as I can recall, nothing came from it. And that was quite a negative experience I had. And I think it was from there, really, I decided I wasn't going to do any sort of creator summits. I wasn't going to, you know, go to things where it was just listening to people behind a website talk about the website anymore. It just wasn't for me, you know. And over the years, I've sort of slowed down the amount of conventions I go to as well. I used to go to Playlist Live and VidCon and Summer in the City every year. And now I'm way more selective. Yeah. Of the things that I attend. Whereas I used to attend them every year and be very vocal about people who didn't attend and their loyalty to their fans, because I was a very, very loud-mouthed girl back in 2014. And now I'm at the stage where I'm just like, I get it, dude. I understand. You have to do what's right for yourself. You know, you have to do what's right for your own mental state and things like that. And Yeah, whether I go to a convention or not these days is very up in the air. Mm. I don't really have the same desires that I used to. And it's not a fan thing. It's just, it can be very, very overwhelming going to conventions where, you know, you've got TikTokers and all this stuff. It used to be Viners. Now it's TikTokers running around with screaming little 12-year-olds. I'm just like, oh my God, I'm nearly 30. And this is weird. I'm 28 now. I started when I was 20. And now I'm seeing all these people that I don't recognize. And they definitely won't know who I am either. It's like, I just feel very out of place. So.
Have you got into like TikTok or any of the new short form platforms?
I have a TikTok. Yeah. I have used it a total of 5 times, I think. I think I prefer watching TikToks to making them. It's not that I don't think I could do it. It's just, it's such a different type of medium for me. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, you know?
Yeah.
Every time I watch them, like on the For You page, because they're all like really like popular TikToks that have like hit the main page, they're all really good. So every single TikTok I see, I'm just like, how is it that suddenly everyone is really funny? Why is everyone able to come up with these ideas that I can't come up with? What's going on? It's quite intimidating, actually, but I'm sure I'll get the hang of it one day.
It is crazy.
Now, I'm just making what I want to make these days. You know, it's good. I want to start creating more of a sort of hub on Patreon once my EP is out, and then just sort of try and have more like open, honest, chilled out way of making a living online and sharing my music and content, things like that.
I think crowdfunding's great for that kind of thing in general.
I think crowdfunding is interesting. I think things like Pledge Music, things like that, they have their ups and downs though. I did an Indiegogo fundraiser back in 2014 where I shaved my head. We raised £26,000 for charity.
Amazing.
You know, it was a very, very good platform to use, but you know, I found it hard keeping up with things like perks and things like that, especially when, you know, when you're typing them out, it sounds so easy, you know, like, oh, you know, I'll send a handwritten letter to 50 people. And then by the time you start writing your third one, you're like, what have I done? I think things like that, they're great for creators who either live with other creators or have like assistants and teams and things like that, very organized teams who can really help you keep track of where you are with your perks and where you are with like distributing music. And also the other thing with things like Pledge Music is how much people remember what they pledged. And some people I've seen have some very strange attitudes towards it. No, like people who pledge money and then turn around and say like, you know, well, you know, I helped you make this record. Without me, this record wouldn't exist. You know, you owe your fans. And, you know, yes, absolutely. You've been integral with helping. But I think there can be some very peculiar attitudes with fundraisers and how people feel they're solely responsible for things. So I personally steer clear. But I think things like Patreon and other platforms for other types of creators, I think they can be really, really beneficial. I think they can help you create like a great community. It's something I really want to explore, like putting out old demos and acoustic versions and just, you know, chatting on a webcam and just talking about my day, you know, things where like they wouldn't necessarily entertain my core audience on YouTube of like 1.3 million people, but maybe like a few hundred on Patreon who really care about everything that I have to say and everything that I'm doing, whether it's music or just living my daily life, you know. I'd like that kind of relaxed, you know. I'm getting on in my years now, I'm getting older, I want to just have a nice relaxed mug of cocoa, get some pajamas on, bed by 10, you know. So I'm just all about exploring different ways of getting my music out there and having a nice community.
Have you had experience of working with a major label before?
I have never been signed to a major label, no. During my album release, just before the album was due out, my then manager at the time took me to meet a sub-label under I think it was under Sony, who had expressed some interest. And I went in there with my then manager and played a couple of tracks from the album that had been released that had done really, really well. You know, you get to talk about how it was on like New Music Friday and things like that. It's very exciting. They know that already. And then I played a demo that I created for Cute Without You, which is a single I released a year later, and played it over a speaker. And it was only a home demo. So, you know, whether it was the right choice or not, but they sat there listening and listening and listening. And they went, wow, this is really great. You know, you wrote this yourself. I was like, yeah, I wrote it myself. They expressed a lot of interest. And then they said, what the next stages are. And I was like, stages? The next stages will be to get you in one of our writing rooms for a day and see what you can come up with. And what that basically translated to was they wanted to see if I'd really written the song myself. Which was new to me, you know, that because I presented them this song that I'd written, that was, I was really proud of it. I think it's really, really great. They then, like I said, they wanted to then bring me in to sort of prove that I could write in front of them, which is not an experience that I wanted to do. I didn't want to, you know, sort of be in this room with people just staring at me like, well, go on, write then, writer.
Write a hit.
So that didn't go anywhere because I didn't want to do that. I don't feel like, you know, I've done a lot in my career. I've done a lot by myself. You know, I've gone from being a waitress in Basildon to, you know, doing this last 8 years. I don't feel this. I hope this doesn't come across as arrogant. I hope it comes across as reasonable. I think I'm past the point in my life where I feel like I need to prove who I am to people that I've only just met. You know, yeah. I don't feel like being introduced to a label should feel like an audition, you know, and that's not me saying, you know, I deserve this signing. I deserve this. Give me this. I'm saying that the way that they put it forward as though there's like next steps, like the next meeting, like, you know, stage two, prove that you can write. It felt a little bit patronizing to me. I didn't really like it. And I figured that, you know what? Sometimes with labels, the amount of cut they take, the direction they want you to take, and just the overall like legal mumbo jumbo. I've seen enough of that with like distributors in the past and everything like that. There's nothing that I can't do by myself independently with my distributor or doing it, you know, on my own completely that a label could potentially bring me at this stage in my career, I reckon. So I'm happy with what I have at the moment. I've been independent, like record label free since the beginning of my life. And it's gone all right so far. So
it's amazing that people can do this now. You know, if we'd have spoken about this maybe 10, 15 years ago, the dream really, and actually the only thing that was supposed to happen is getting signed by a major label.
Yeah, exactly. Like my whole intention of like, you know, my whole like Everest was signed to a major label. That was all I ever wanted when I was a kid. You know, it seemed like that was like the tip of the iceberg. That was like the be all and end all, you know? But I mean, I still remember, you know, when people used to have to send in demo tapes and demo CDs to labels, and then, you know, you'd either get a rejection letter or you'd get completely ignored. I was a little bit too young to actually do it, but I remember that was always the thing. You know, these were these untouchable people that held the keys to the kingdom. Mm. You know, like you couldn't get your record on a shelf unless you had a label behind you. I had no label, and my album ended up in HMV stores all over the UK. I did signings in HMV stores. I got to number 24 in the UK album chart. You know, I did that. I got a top 40 album, didn't have a label, never had a label. And you read all these stories about artists that have, you know, fallen out with their labels. I don't know if you know the story of like JoJo and the battle that she had to go through.
Oh, what was that?
Well, do you remember JoJo? Like back when she was like 13?
Get out right now. What a banger.
To long story short, basically her label went bust a couple of years into her career. And then she was in this massive legal battle where they refused to relinquish the masters, relinquish the rights. All of her music was taken off of like online buying platforms. They never put up on streaming platforms. And she was basically unable to release music under her name. The record label owned her voice, even though they were bankrupt pretty much, I think.
God.
I mean, this is all allegedly because I can't remember word for word. So
yeah.
Nobody sue me. That record label basically just controlled her. And she's only recently been able to get the rights back. And now she's, you know, she's being very, very successful again. But it basically stunted her career for the last like 10 years or so. You know, you read all these horror stories and the recent one with Taylor Swift, who doesn't own her masters to every album except her last one. Even though she tried to buy them and wanted an offer for them. And instead, out of bitterness, they were sold to someone that she personally very, very much dislikes. Her music's now owned by Scooter Braun, you know, and she's very, very outspoken about it. You read all these horror stories about, you know, when people sign to labels, especially when they're young or they don't have the right guidance. You know, I felt like even in my career without a label, like I've been given some poor guidance in the past. You know, I've had decisions made that weren't the best decisions. I've approved things that were put forward to me that I thought were a good idea because I trusted these people. You know, I've had people sort of get very carried away with my expenditure. You know, I said in one of my recent videos, my music video for Dirt, the lead single of my album, cost £15,000. That's what the director wanted, and that's what my team at the time paid, you know. And I was told it was normal. You know?
Yeah, like it never fails to shock me how easy people will say, "Oh, you should do this. It's only X amount of money," and sometimes it's actually a lot of money to anybody. It would be a lot of money to anybody.
Exactly.
And it's just like, oh, really? You think I should pay that for that?
Like, exactly. But I mean, I want to state that like none of this money was spent like without my explicit permission. But yeah. I did very much feel like suggestions were recommended to me. And I was very much of the belief that, you know, this is normal. Well, you have to spend money to make money. And, you know, well, if you want a good product, you have to put in the cash, you have to be dedicated, you know, and I was very much of that belief because that was what was being told to me, you know, at that time. So yeah, I just want to make that clear, like no funny business happened, but yeah. I feel like there was some interesting guidance throughout my career, and I'm certainly not saying, you know, my career was stunted because of everyone but me. Ultimately, I am the one that has to say yes or no to these things, but you know, it can be very difficult being, you know, steering your way through the industry when you have to sort of learn as you go. You know, if you don't already have the experience and you're doing things for the first time, mistakes are going to be made, accidents are going to happen, you're going to regret doing things, you know, a certain way in a year's time or so. And the problem is, because it's your career, everyone can see it in real time, yeah. You know, and you often find as well that everyone's a critic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I would have done it this way. Well, what you should have done was you should have released this song. Well, I put out an invitation for people to have their say on my latest video, talking about like, you know, what I would do differently now with my album. And I asked people like, what singles would you have released? And the amount of suggestions and comments I got, like from people saying, I would have released this, and then I would have released this, and then I would have done six more singles. And I was like, whoa. Again, it's a case of not people, you know, just being silly, but people just genuinely don't understand the amount of like prep work and planning and money and everything that goes into each and every release, even if it's like a soft single, like a lyric video. And that's the whole reason I wanted to start making this kind of content.
Yeah.
Was because people don't know, and I want to be able to educate people. And if one independent musician can watch my videos and learn something, just like I wish I could have learned something when I first started with this, it's worth it to me. And yeah. I really enjoy making that sort of stuff. I think it's helpful.
I think it definitely is. And if there was that kind of content when I was first starting out, I think, you know, I probably would have skipped a few mistakes of my own.
Same. Well, they're my mistakes. but yeah, it's been a learning curve. But you know what? It's my career. I'm proud of it. I'm happy with everything that's happened, despite, you know, wanting to change a few things. Just you have to be at a part of acceptance where, you know, you can't change what's happened. You can only learn from it. And sometimes, you know, the positive thing has to be, you know, well, if I put it out there that I would do things differently now, hopefully people take that advice and don't see my mistakes as like a blueprint.
Right.
You know, hopefully they see the advice that I'm giving now with the knowledge I have now as a blueprint instead.
Yeah.
You know, but ultimately, I mean, I'm talking like my career has been like a massive failure, but it's gone incredibly well. I think any musician, any creator does focus on their mistakes quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think criticism stands out to people a lot more than is imagined. A metaphor that I always use is, people always say to me, like, you know, oh, Emma, you always reply to negative comments and you always, like, you know, take things to heart, but you never appreciate all the nice comments you get, all the lovely things. And I totally do. But the metaphor that I always use is, imagine that you're in a room with 100 people and you're told to go down this line of 100 people and shake 100 different hands, right? And somewhere between 100, one person doesn't put out their hand and they just slap you in the face. They just crack you one in your cheek, right? And then you carry on shaking hands. After that event, when you think about it, the next day, the next week, what do you remember from that event? You remember when you were cracked in the face. you want to believe, you'd think, oh, well, I shook 99 hands. I had a really, you know, not in this pandemic, don't shake hands. But, you know, you want to think that you'd think of the 99 people, but ultimately, someone punched you in the face. Someone socked you one. You know, the negative stuff always stands out.
Yeah.
And I think a creator's career is very much about how they learn to deal with that themselves.
Yeah,
you know, and how they learn to deal with the fact that it will always exist. You know, criticism will always be there, whether it's directly or indirectly. I think it's all about overcoming it yourself.
As you move forward with your career, do you ever see yourself becoming a manager of somebody else?
Possibly. You know, right now I'm still, I feel like I'm very much still in like a very, really good place in my own career. And I want to dedicate all my time to my own music.
Yeah.
But in the future, like there may come a time where, you know, I see an upcoming artist and think, why is this person not being picked up? And, you know, I might start giving them like a little bit of help here and there. And then you never know.
Mm.
You know, it's something that, you know, I have thought about, you know, because I feel like I have my fair share of experience with management, the good and the bad. But it's, yeah, maybe I'd be a better manager than I would artist. Who knows?
I mean, I just think sometimes like the people who've been in it as independents have, you know, so much experience of how it's all changing. And part of that is something I find so interesting. You know, when we first got onto YouTube, YouTube was a baby and so underdeveloped and just a completely different thing. And now there's YouTube and TikTok and all the rest of it. And
oh, God, yeah, it was so primitive, wasn't it?
Yeah. And now you can actually upload your songs to iTunes. Like, you could never do that when we were 16. There was nothing. You couldn't do that. The access was through the major labels.
I think it's when I was 20 that people started using things like CD Baby, and I was like, what is going on? I don't understand it.
Yeah.
And that's why when I started out, I just put my music on Bandcamp, you know, which is a great platform for independent musicians.
Do you still use that?
I don't know, because I'm with a distributor.
Ah, okay, yeah.
And obviously it's a little bit more difficult when you've got them sort of with the distribution rights of things.
Yeah.
But I would recommend to anyone who isn't signed with a distributor, put your music on Bandcamp. You know, give people the opportunity to like actually buy your songs and have all of the money go directly to the artist.
Mm.
You know, give them the ability to just own an MP3. You know, now it's all Apple Music and all Spotify and things like that. Some of my songs have millions and millions of streams, but like maybe like a couple hundred purchases.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of people don't want to purchase things off of iTunes or Amazon or things like that. I think Bandcamp is just a really good way of also connecting with fans in that way. You can send out like mailing lists and things like that. It was a good platform. I enjoyed using it for the time that I was mad on it. But
do you work with a merch company?
I do. I work with a Sandbag. I used to work with a merch company called Firebrand, and then an employee there moved over to Sandbag, and it was suggested that I follow. And I did, and they're good.
do you feel like CDs are like, I mean, I hate to
antiquated,
say it,
antiquated, a thing of the past,
you know?
Is that what you think?
Yeah.
Do you know what?
It's hard, isn't
it? I don't want to say that because I like people buying my CDs. And I know a lot of people do. I know a lot of people do still really, really love having the physical product. They like hanging on their walls and things like that. I switched over to digital, I think, like, except for like Taylor Swift. I switched over to digital. I think it must have been like pretty much soon after Spotify came about. I was in college when Spotify started up. I started college in 2008. I think I got a Spotify account around that time. And as soon as things started going digital and, you know, streaming wise, and also, you know, I was just more into buying stuff on iTunes. This I used to have this great big, like, fat, like, big folder of CDs for the car.
Yeah.
You know, and they're all like 2007 sort of Fall Out Boy and things like that. But now it is very rare that I will buy a physical CD. Like I said, unless it's like Taylor Swift, where it's like you get something like really, really special.
Yeah.
Then I went through like a vinyl phase, but I think everyone went through a vinyl phase. My vinyl phase has ended. I spent a lot of money on it and I never played them. But yeah, I'm pretty much just all digital now. I still like buy albums I like. The most recent one was Hayley Williams' album, which is out this Friday, I think. As soon as that was out for pre-order, like I went to iTunes to get it. Because I think it's still important to support artists that you really, really love. Mm. But for the most part, you know, I stream just like everyone else.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of artists went through a phase of really hating streaming for a while when it first got really, really popular.
There was some controversy, wasn't there, with Taylor Swift and Spotify originally?
Yeah. I mean, that was a good controversy, though. It was Apple Music, I think, primarily the issue was, because Apple Music were offering a three-month free trial when it first launched.
Yeah, that was it, Apple Music.
And they weren't going to pay the artists for all of the streams. So so she wrote a letter to Tim Cook, and it worked.
Yeah,
because that's the power that Taylor Swift has. She wrote, you know, I mean, there are conspiracy theories as to whether, you know, the whole thing was planned, you know, tinfoil hat. But I like to believe it's just the power that Taylor Swift has, just saying, pay the artist, and them going, oh, shit, it's Taylor Swift. Oh, God, no. But, you know, was it all a planned correspondence?
I'd like to think
who knows?
Not. I'd like to think
who
not.
Who knows? I'd like to think not as well. But yeah, her music wasn't on Spotify, was it? For ages and ages, until I think she put her music back on Spotify the same day that Katy Perry's Witness came out, I think.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And it was like, whoa.
Yeah, there was that a bit of a feed there, wasn't there?
Yeah, I'm glad they've made up now, but I always remember finding that really, really, really interesting.
Yeah.
That I think Katy was doing some sort of big launch. And then Taylor was just like, oh, by the way, my music's available to stream now. Bye. I was like, oh, queen. I love it. You know, as a Scorpio, I love that shit.
Oh, you're a Scorpio.
Oh, as if you couldn't tell, right? You know, always avoid us.
Fellow Scorpio. Fellow Scorpio.
Stay away from us. We are terrible people.
Dangerous.
I'm kidding. We're great.
Dangerous.
We're great to other Scorpios.
Yeah, we do dangerous. Have a little bit of a clan going, don't we?
If you are an Aries, don't talk to me. I don't get along with Aries at all.
It's not
go
weird.
Away. Not good. We're both really hot-headed. It's like a Gryffindor and Slytherin from Harry Potter. It's like you have just enough in common to piss each other off.
Yeah.
You're both determined, but in very different ways.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work. So
have you ever clashed with someone like in a band who turned out to be Aries?
Yeah. Yeah,
have you really?
I've had loads of ex friends who I've then fallen out with and gone, I wonder. Yeah. Most of my fallouts have been with people who are Aries. It's very weird.
Wow.
I'm not massive on the horoscope thing usually in the astrology, but for some reason that always matches up. It's really strange.
That's freaky.
I don't think I've ever met a Sagittarius in my life. Or Capricorn.
I've never met anyone who's admitted to be Sagittarius before.
That's what I'm saying. It's like maybe I have, but Sagittarius and Capricorn, it seems like they never talk about being a Sagittarius or Capricorn.
No.
So you never know.
No one ever says that, do they? Capricorn.
Just like the nicest. They're just the nicest, sweetest people. And you never know who they are. Some people you're like, ah, you're a Gemini. Oh dear. Oh, it's a Leo. But yeah, Scorpio, Sagittarius. It's like mysterious. They just pop out of nowhere.
Yeah, very
silent assassins. What has this episode turned into now?
I don't know. It's gone from being in the music genre to conspiracy theories.
I've just talked your ear off about music for so long. I think we've talked about everything there is to know about music. So now we're just doing a weekly horoscope.
What does yours look like? Do you know?
Probably trouble. It's always trouble. Obviously. But I don't think that's a Scorpio thing. I think that's an Emma Blackery thing. There's usually some sort of trouble. And if there's not trouble, I'll make trouble. It's not good.
That makes me want to ask you if, do you have a lawyer for your music stuff?
I do. I have a law firm that I work with for both my entertainment and my music stuff. I have one lawyer who just looks over every contract that I'm sent, pay them nicely for their time.
Yeah.
Lawyers. But yeah, he's very cool. He's a very super professional, as you would hope that lawyers would be.
Mm.
And he's been really, really helpful with outlining certain things and saying this shouldn't be worded in this way, getting some things taken out, some things added in. He's been pretty helpful with stuff like that. Find people who can look over things and who have a previous understanding of what certain things mean. And if you can't find someone like that, just print out the contract, print it out. Don't just sign it digitally, print it out and go through it with a highlighter, tooth and comb. Just go through everything, look up what everything means. It's boring. It takes forever.
Yeah.
You'll be so sick of the word appendix, you want your own appendix taken out. But it's so, so important to understand what territories mean, what exclusivity means, what perpetuity means.
Word.
All of those, I hate that fucking word. it's so important to understand what all these means. What is the term? You know, things like that. It's so important and it will save you so much grief in the long term. If you can, number one, obviously get a lawyer to do it because they're trained in this stuff. But if you can't afford to get one, just spend so, so, so much time on your own contracts. Think about, do you want it to go on for like 1 year or 2 year or 3 years? If it's a contract about certain releases, what does release mean? Does it mean single? Does it mean EP? Does it mean album? Does it mean like a greatest hits? Things like that. Because some contracts will be like, you know, oh, well, we'll contract you not for a certain amount of years, but a certain amount of releases with us. And it's like, what constitutes a release? Do you want me to make 7 full albums? Do you want 7 singles and then I can get the hell out of there? Things like that are very, very important to look over. So I would highly, highly advise getting things like that. And also another thing that I would suggest, and this comes from personal experience, if you're an independent musician and you are hiring a session player to be on your record, get some sort of agreement drafted up. Seriously, yeah. Very, very important. Not just for things like PRS and PPL, which are like collecting rights, of course, and royalties, but also from my experience on my debut EP called Distance, I had my then producer, my friend Arthur, he brought in a guitarist who's well known in a YouTube duo band. He played guitar on the record and it was only thanks to my then previous boyfriend, he drew up like a little contract, which signaled basically a buyout. So he would get, this session musician would get paid for the tracks that he was on. No further. It was just solid buyout, no royalties or anything like that. And he signed it and it was all fine, all well and good. And then the EP came out and it did phenomenally well. It did really, really well. It was like number one in the iTunes rock chart. The single from It Go the Distance like got like a million views or so. I don't think this certain musician was prepared for that.
I mean, it shouldn't have mattered really either way.
No, it shouldn't, because he signed a buyout. But I was then told from various sources that I was being spoken about in a very negative light for the contract that he chose to sign. This is all allegedly, but you know, I was told through like multiple sources that I was being bad mouthed. And this musician then signed to a record label with his band. And as soon as he signed, he then got in contact with my previous boyfriend and said, can you send over the contract? My label want to have a look at it. Which is very strange, because this is like a year later, you know. So my then boyfriend had the pretty ingenious idea of scanning in the physical signed copy that was there, so there could be no like digital alterations or anything like that. Because we were just so curious, why would his current label, like a year later, why would his suddenly new label be interested in reading over a contract that has nothing to do with them? Unless obviously this situation had been spoken about, you know, to them, and they might have gone, well, we'll see if we can find a loophole in it, see if we can get you some royalties from it or something like that. You know, that's what I'm assuming from it. It's all allegedly, but ultimately we sent the contract over and nothing else came from it because he had signed a legitimate document. You know, everything was watertight. So that was my experience with someone, I presume, trying to, you know, see if they could get a little bit more than what was agreed from a recording. But it sucks. Basically, just have your session musicians sign something. Seriously. Even if you're like an independent band, you know, even if you're a band, get a document drafted up for all of you guys. Like, even if you're all technically the artist. My God, the amount of bands that fall out through things like that. Paramore, for one.
Yeah.
You know. The amount of bands that have like major issues with things, just get your shit written up. It's so important.
I have the last two questions to ask you. Are you ready?
I am. I'm very ready for this chill conversation with no questions.
No questions, apart from these last two questions.
Apart from these two that you have written down. You sneaky sneaker. Scorpio.
They're not written down. They're all in here.
Even worse. Scorpio.
Prepared Scorpio.
Carry on, sorry. love it.
Okay. What is your track of the week?
I just recently listened to Marshmello and Halsey. It's called Be Kind. I only heard it today.
Cool. Is it on New Music Friday?
I don't know. Possibly. I'm not sure. I would have thought it would be.
I think I saw something
about
it.
Being Marshmello and Halsey, I'm sure it would be on New Music Friday. Mm. But I was listening to other Halsey songs and then I saw that release and it's really, really good. It's a really, really good pop tune.
Nice.
Very warm feeling. Very fun, nice vocals. I'd give it a 9 out of 10.
Ooh, wow!
On the Emma pop song review.
Okay,
this is why I don't have a podcast. This is exactly why I don't have a podcast. What about you? Ooh. What are you listening to? Oh, it's been flipped.
Oh no, I'm not prepared for this.
No. Okay. So what about you, Hannah?
My track of the week. I'm gonna be that guy and say, well, I wrote a track that came out this week with a guy called Mike Dignam, and it's called Who Am I? And it's a great song. But
you
I did
legend.
Write it, so.
You absolute legend, you self-promo
so
queen.
I got to get that promo. No,
I love it.
I haven't heard the song for so long, and then he dropped it, and I was like, yes, this is a great song. You know when you're just like, yeah,
oh, I love
great
that.
Song. And I'm just super proud to be involved in that. So, yeah.
Oh, well, everyone go and listen to it. Everyone go and find it right now. It will be in the notes or something. I think that's what people in podcasts say.
We didn't plan this part of the podcast just to
No, no, no. hang on. Let me just make sure none of the money is showing anywhere. I've hidden it all. It's okay. But that's really cool. Everyone go and listen to that song.
Yeah,
I'm sure
absolutely.
It's amazing. I'm going to go listen after this is all finished.
After your last question, which is,
ooh,
what is the best lesson that you've learned in your career so far?
Oh, man. You know what? If you'd asked me a couple of years ago, I would have said, follow your heart and trust your gut instinct.
Okay.
Now I would say, follow your heart and trust your gut instinct. After you've had about 24 hours to sit with whatever idea it is, I would say it's right. Good to be impulsive. It's good to do things that you really care about.
Yeah.
But sometimes, even if whether it's just posting on social media, whether it's just, you know, this idea you have on a whim for a music video or something, just take a minute.
Just think about
it. You're always going to be very excited in the first 10 seconds of coming up with the idea.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, just trust your gut instinct, but your gut instinct might change over 24 hours. So that, and get a lawyer. Just sign contracts. And that's it. That's my advice.
Sweet. Thanks so much for speaking to me today.
Oh, no problem. Hannah, good luck with the new single and all the new music that you're writing.
Thanks so much. You too. When does the EP come out?
Thanks. It comes out May 15th. It's called My Arms Are Open. It's got four tracks on it. The debut single, Wolves, is already out. It's on my Vivo, Emma Blackery Vivo, if you hadn't guessed that already. And I'm looking forward for everyone to hear the next three songs in just over a week. Ah!
Scary. Gosh, coming up. Check it out, people.
Thanks.
Thanks for tuning into this episode. Be sure to hit subscribe and leave a comment to let us know what you think. And I will see you next time on Backstage Pass.